And good morning. You are listening to People Rise Up on your non-commercial community radio station, KBOO, in Portland, Oregon. My name is Andrew Geller, and as most other folks, I've been paying attention to what's been going on along the Gulf Coast of our country over the course of the past week and a half, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. Is not so much the storm itself, because there's not much you could do about the storm itself, but what you can do is impact how people are able to ride out the storm and recover from it. And myself, through news clippings and other people's analysis, as well as my guest later on in the program this morning, we'll be talking about how the federal government intentionally let thousands of people die in New Orleans. Is there a plan that had those people die? Probably not, but there were plans to save those people, and they were not enacted. They were willfully not enacted. This is the second time the Bush administration has been responsible in a direct way for thousands of dead Americans on U.S. soil. We all know the first one, September 11 of 2001. I'm not drawing comparisons between the two events in any sense other than the administration wholly failed to do anything to prevent or mitigate either. This time, the death toll looks like it'll be five figures, not four figures. And I think these people need to be stopped before we have a six-figure mass casualty event that the Bush administration claims it couldn't have known anything about, couldn't have done anything to stop. I'm going to do a minute of silence here on the radio for all the people needlessly killed by the Bush administration last week and who are continuing to die as a result of bad water, lack of food, dehydration. So I'll be back in 1 minute. Okay, so there's a minute of radio silence for the people who were needlessly killed by the Bush administration for failing to respond in anything close to an appropriate manner when it was more than well known that there were dangerous inadequacies in the maintenance of the levees and the fact that the levees themselves just were never built to withstand the type of hurricane that came through just a week and a half ago. Nor probably the 1969 Hurricane Camille, which was the last really big storm to hit the coast. But it certainly wasn't, either of those certainly weren't the biggest hurricanes to hit that part of the country over the history of this country. 1900, huge hurricane came across Galveston. And it's been known for a very long time that the levees in New Orleans were inadequate to save the city should there be anything beyond a Category 3 hurricane. They're rated 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5's the worst. Katrina was a Category 5 hurricane just before it made landfall. It technically dropped to a Category 4, but it was at the boundary of a Category 5 hurricane when it made landfall very early Monday morning, August 29. several days later, after he'd gotten around to being able to take a look from hundreds of feet above, flying at hundreds of miles an hour, George W. Bush said, ABC News, Good Morning America, September 1st. I don't think anyone anticipated the breach of the levees. I don't think anyone anticipated the breach of the levees. Now, in the past 5 years, I've noticed that when George W. Bush says, I don't think anyone, he means himself, as far as I've been able to tell. And I completely believe that he personally did not anticipate the breach of the levees. But lots of people did. In fact, lots of people did who were in positions to know about these things. I found a quote from 1832 in a book called Domestic Manners of the Americas. This was published at Slate.com yesterday by Timothy Noah. And I won't read you the quote. It's from Fanny Trollope's Domestic Manners of the Americas, and it talks exactly about farewell to New Orleans should Mother Nature really ever give it its all down in that region. And where's it go? Here we go. Nope, that's not it either. Keep in mind, I got a whole... Oh, here we are. Warnings. I got a whole bunch of material here I'm going to try and siphon through. Okay, so many of you probably know about this. Sorry to those of you who, for this, I'm repeating things, but many of you may not know about some of this stuff. Editor and publisher, September 4. Editorandpublisher.com. Dr. Max Mayfield, director of the National Hurricane Center, told the Times-Picayune Sunday afternoon that officials with the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Department of Homeland Security, including soon-to-be outgoing FEMA Director Mike Brown and Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff, listened in on electronic briefings given by his staff in advance of Hurricane Katrina slamming Louisiana and Mississippi and were advised of the storm's potentially deadly effects. Mayfield stressed the strength of the storm and the potential disaster to both officials and warned a surge capable of overtopping the levees was likely. Mayfield says, it's not like this was a surprise. We had in the advisories that the levees could be topped. And now, for those National Weather Service bulletins out of New Orleans. Bear with me here, folks. Sunday, day before the hurricane hits, August 28, 10:11, urgent weather message, National Weather Service, New Orleans. I am paraphrasing here for brevity. Regarding Hurricane Katrina, unprecedented strength rivaling Camille of 1969. Most of the area will be uninhabitable for weeks, perhaps longer. At least one half of all well-constructed homes will have roof and or wall failure. The majority of industrial buildings will become non-functional. Airborne debris will be widespread and may include large household appliances and even light vehicles. Persons, pets, and livestock exposed to the winds will face certain death if struck. Power outages will last for weeks. Water shortages will make human suffering incredible by modern standards. 6 hours later, Hurricane Katrina Advisory Number 24, National Hurricane Center, Miami, regarding Hurricane Katrina, now about 18 hours or so before landfall. Expected to make landfall at Category 4 or 5, preparations to protect life and property should be completed this evening. This is Sunday the 28th. Coastal storm surge flooding of 18 to 22 feet above normal tide, locally as high as 28 feet. Levees in the greater New Orleans area may be overtopped. Significant storm surge flooding will occur elsewhere. Will occur is not ambiguous. Additionally, on Monday, the 29th, just hours after Hurricane Katrina makes landfall, the National Weather Service, 9 a.m. Louisiana time, Monday. Hurricane Katrina local statement out of New Orleans. Direct hit on New Orleans. Levees overtopped in Orleans and St. Bernard parishes. Extensive and life-threatening storm surge flooding occurring across the Gulf Coast at this time. Again, 18 to 22 foot storm surge. Day prior, Michael Chertoff said the levees didn't become a problem until Tuesday, August 30th, when the National Weather Service, a full 24 hours in advance of that time, confirms that, in fact, the levees had already been overtopped. Now, again, that is not a surprise that the levees were overtopped. I had two documents in my possession for the past several days, and I just couldn't figure out why I was able to have both of them until someone at... Oh, I wish I could remember the blog. Let's hear it for the bloggers. I've never really been much for checking blogs out, but people have been putting some amazing stuff out. Okay, I'm going to talk about this just a little bit. We're going to bring my guest Wayne Madsen, investigative journalist in the Washington, D.C. area, into the mix for a little while, and I'll have some more news for you at the end. White House Office Press of the Press Secretary for immediate release, August 27, that is Saturday. Authorizing the Department of Homeland Security and FEMA to coordinate all disaster relief efforts in about 25 or so parishes across Louisiana. And the next day, Governor Kathleen Blanco of Louisiana sends Bush a letter through the regional FEMA director in Texas asking for aid for a whole bunch of specific parishes. And I said, well, this doesn't make sense. It says the White House here got, you know, everything rolling on the 27th, and here's the 28th, and the governor's saying, look, we need this help. I wondered, well, did she not get the letter? Well, that couldn't be, because of course she'd be contacted. What happened was, when the White House initially ordered emergency relief and rescue efforts, they happened to omit the 13 or so parishes, and that's a county down in Louisiana, the White House specifically omitted the 13 or so parishes that the governor of Louisiana specifically requested aid for because they were going to be the hardest hit by the storms. And now, the concept that these areas would be hardest hit by a hurricane coming in that direction isn't any sort of surprise, because when the Federal Emergency Management Agency, back in July of 2004, conducted its Hurricane Pam exercise, which was supposed to model the type of hurricane, at least come close to modeling the type of hurricane that came ashore this weekend, the Hurricane Pam scenario focused on 13 parishes in southeast Louisiana, and wouldn't you know it, it's the same 13 parishes that the governor of Louisiana said these places are going to get hammered. Major damage was described. Another 13 or 15 parishes were said to about to be suffering significant damage. And none of the parishes asked by the governor to receive emergency aid because they were going to be the hardest hit. 25 or 30 parishes in Louisiana, and the White House specifically excluded them from the initial aid released. Specifically excluded them. Curious what their voting patterns in those parishes are like. The last time an American city was lost was 1906. You already guessed it, didn't you? San Francisco earthquake. Two earthquakes, 5:13 and 8:14 a.m. Before the second quake, federal troops reported to the mayor, and they were already patrolling the entire downtown searching for survivors. 2 hours after the second quake, the USS Chicago departed San Diego, and the USS Preble landed a medical team and set up a hospital. Evacuations of people from large parts of the city that were on fire by 11 a.m. was taking place with troops that arrived throughout the day. Emergency housing for everyone who needed it was on its way to San Francisco by 5 a.m. the next morning. And 100 years later, we can't do some sort of response along these lines. Don't buy it. It was intentional. I'm going to do a little musical break here. This is some original folk songs of the Louisiana Acadians. This here is You Had Some, But You Don't No More. We'll be back in a minute with Wayne Madsen. And that there is You Had Some, But You Don't Anymore, off Folk Songs of Louisiana Acadians. Got a bunch of Acadian music in the library down here, and it's a great thing. For those of you who don't know, the Acadians off the southeastern part of Canada were the original inhabitants, the original white inhabitants of the Gulf region that was hit, and that's where the Cajun phenomena comes from. You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO in Portland, and we're talking about fallout over the lack of appropriate response and preventative measures by the federal government, not to let state and local officials off the hook, but they really do turn to the feds when large stuff overwhelms local resources. Okay, so Wayne Madsen is an investigative journalist based in the Washington, D.C. area. He's a periodic commentator on this and other programs here on KBOO, and I'm very pleased to welcome you back to our airwaves. Good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing just okay. It's been a very difficult several days. So the administration, really from the get-go, has appeared to be more interested in seeming like it's got everything under control as opposed to actually having things under control. And I'm just curious, in a broad sense, what your assessment is of how the federal government did and did not respond to what was really a tremendous natural disaster along the Gulf Coast.
Well, we saw basically My Pet Goat Part 2 with Mr. Bush. This was a Category 5 hurricane. When it struck, it was between a 4 and a 5. It lost a little strength, but this is still a dangerous storm. Bush was, of course, at a photo op in San Diego. He stopped to have some birthday cake with Senator McCain. He seemed very much disinterested in the entire the events that were taking place on the Gulf Coast, and then to compound things, he takes a look at the damage from 5,000 feet from Air Force One on his way from Crawford back to Washington, D.C., which, again, is just the same sorts of image we saw from this particular president on 9/11 when he went and hit in a hole in Nebraska. This is a very disinterested person. This is a person who I think feels that he's not really the president, but he's more like Prince Charles, that all he has to do is attend these staged events and look good for the cameras. As far as a leader and a hands-on president, he's a total disaster and a failure. The spin that you mentioned, I think, is because Karl Rove, who is his chief spinmeister, the White House deputy chief of staff, always tries to put a political spin on any event, even a tragedy where we may have well in excess of 30,000 dead American citizens, not refugees, as these people from FEMA first started to call them. And I think, once again, it shows that the Department of Homeland Security wasn't created to protect Americans. It was created to create a huge bureaucracy to funnel yet more American tax money into the pockets of large defense, security, and information technology contractors.
Now, Bush has made no secret of the fact that he himself doesn't really like to keep up on current events, doesn't read newspapers, but wouldn't you think that there'd be people at the Homeland Security Department or FEMA that might stay up on current events and stuff like that? I mean, these guys were briefed.
Well, you would think so. We've got a FEMA director who, of course, his past job, which he was fired from, was the head of the International Arabian Horse Association. He was in charge of judges, and I don't know what the connection between that job and being the chief disaster recovery officer for the United States is. This guy's a political hack from Oklahoma. He was a GOP hack. He was hired, incidentally, he was fired by the horse people because he was too much involved in Bush's campaign. In 2000, he was picked up by Bush's former chief of staff in Texas, Joe Allball, who Bush immediately put in charge of FEMA when he first came into office. So we've seen FEMA turn into what FEMA was under Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. It was nothing more than a political patronage agency where you put these people where they would have these fairly substantial budgets and could fly around using all the FEMA aircraft for so-called FEMA work when these trips were nothing more than boondoggles. I investigated FEMA corruption during Ronald Reagan, and it looks like we've actually turned back the clock. Now, Jamie Lee Wynn, under Clinton, who was FEMA director, he was actually a disaster recovery professional, the first one they ever had there. And the first thing, of course, this Bush did was get rid of all of Witt's people and replace them with his own political friends.
Well, and it seems to be that they also eliminated a lot of positions and really tried to, you know, make things more efficient and streamlined.
Well, the worst thing of all was when they rolled FEMA into this Department of Homeland Security, which I still contend was a mistake creating that. Mm-hmm. That's the mother of all bureaucracies. And I just incidentally just discovered that the person from 2002 to 2003, now this was when Tom Ridge was Homeland Security Director and when Joe Allball was FEMA Director, the person who was heading up FEMA's Office of Legislative Affairs, in other words, the person who was responsible for interfacing with Congress on issues like the money that the Louisiana Congressional Delegation was asking for flood control, hurricane relief, hurricane preparedness in Louisiana and New Orleans, this person who was the legislative affairs person was none other than Meryl Chertoff, the wife of current Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff. There's another glaring conflict of interest, but this administration is one huge conflict of interest.
I read in an article last night, which I don't have in front of me right now, that Mike Brown and Joseph Albaugh were college roommates.
Well, that's it. I mean, this is the chummy. This is what you don't put people in these critical jobs based on their know-how, their experience, their capabilities, but merely this is Bush fraternity. You know, this is a fraternity type administration. So, you know, it's like Bush appointing his former college roommate Victor Ashe to be ambassador to Poland, and he was on the board of Fannie Mae. This is just one, you know, the good old boys, you know, taking care of each other, and as a result of this fraternity administration, we now have all these displaced people in Louisiana and New Orleans and Mississippi and Alabama, and all the deaths that many of which could have been prevented had there been just more coordination, more foresight, more competence, because they've done now to Louisiana and the Gulf Coast what they've done to Iraq. They basically destroyed both regions.
I've got a couple of FEMA press releases in my hand here. I'm going to reference the one from last July 2004 regarding their Hurricane Pam exercise, which was sort of like their tabletop rough draft of what happens with a hurricane of 120 mile an hour winds. There were 165 mile an hour with Katrina, 20 inches of rain, and a storm surge that topped levees. Over a million residents would need to be evacuated, with half a million buildings destroyed. Now, a lot of that is similar to exactly what happened on August 29th when Katrina made landfall. A summary of their action plan noted that they would need 1,000 shelters for 100 days. That was their planning mindset. They would also need adequate resources to operate the shelters for the first 5 days. 5 days beyond, I guess they figured, you know, they'd be able to get replacements in. The search and rescue group had developed a transportation plan, et cetera, medical stuff. And following the conclusion of that exercise, there was a contract awarded. June 3, 2004, I'm sorry, the press release from IEM with the contract award does take place just prior to the Hurricane Pam exercise concluding, but it's in the same ballpark, June and July of 2004. IEM will lead the development of a catastrophic hurricane disaster plan for Southeast Louisiana and the city of New Orleans under a more than $500,000 contract with Homeland Security and FEMA. James Lee Witt Associates was going to be one of the consulting partners on the project. Let's see, Thomas. Who is Thomas here? Representative from IEM. Nope. Yeah, IEM Director of Homeland Security Wayne Thomas said the Greater New Orleans area is one of the nation's most vulnerable locations for hurricane landfall. Jump forward. Monday, August 29th, FEMA press release. Release number HQ05174. First responders urged not to respond. Michael Brown urged all fire and emergency services departments not to respond to counties and states without being requested and lawfully dispatched by state and local authorities. He said, quote, "The response to Hurricane Katrina must be well coordinated between federal, state, and local officials to most effectively protect life and property." That's the day the hurricane made landfall.
Right. Well, what we see here with IEM getting that over $500,000 contract, incidentally, they never developed that plan, and they fraudulently used the name James Lee Witt on its press release, which is, I understand is back up on their website. It was taken down as Katrina pounded New Orleans. They took it down. Now it's back up, but I was very critical of James Lee Witt, because I figured, my God, if he's part of this group, and now he's been hired by Governor Blanco of Louisiana to be in charge of the state's recovery efforts, I mean, why would you reward that kind of person? And then, of course, his spokesperson called me and says, wait a minute. That company, IEM, used our good name to get that contract, and also I was informed that the press release from IEM to do that catastrophic hurricane disaster recovery plan, that press release was dated prior to the award of the contract by FEMA. So this is, again, here we have more chicanery involved with this administration, and then trying to bring in James Lee Witt, who was FEMA's most effective director during Bill Clinton's term. And I just smell that there's this attempt to blame not only the governor of Louisiana and the mayor of New Orleans, but also now to blame Clinton's FEMA director. And this was, and any time I see somebody being set up this way through fraudulent documents, you know.
I want to play a 55-second piece of tape here that I heard about from BBC World News Report. I don't know exactly when this initially aired on the BBC, but I am certain that it was after, it had to be after Tuesday, August 30th, is my best guess. Now, we're going to listen here to BBC reporter speaking with Northern Command Lieutenant Commander Sean Kelly. Now, Northern Command is responsible for organizing relief operations on the military side on the Gulf Coast. Also, this is Northern Command's, as well as the Department of Homeland Security's, first real test of their ability to deal in a crisis. So here we go, and apologize for any digital noise in the feed of this. You know how things get when they bounce around the web a bunch. So here we go, NORAD Lieutenant Commander Sean Kelly.
Now, I'm sure you're aware of the criticism that the authorities have been slow to respond to this. When did you get the order to start relief work?
NORTHCOM started planning before the storm even hit. We were ready for the storm when it hit Florida because, as you remember, it crossed the bottom part of Florida. And then we were planning, once it was pointed towards the Gulf Coast. So what we did was we activated what we call defense coordinating officers to work with the states to say, okay, what do you think you will need? And we set up staging bases that could be started. We had the USS Bataan sailing almost behind the hurricane so that after the hurricane made landfall, its search and rescue helicopters would be available almost immediately. So, we had things ready. The only caveat is we have to wait until the president authorizes us to do so. The laws of the United States say that the military can't just act in this fashion. We have to wait for the president to give us permission.
Which I'm perfectly happy with. I like the idea that there's civilian control of the military, but point remains, they can't just go do something. The New York Times reports this morning that Navy pilots who rescued civilians when what they were supposed to be doing was delivering food and water to military installations have been, quote, chided by their superiors for, diverting from their original mission.
Which means their careers are basically over because they'll get a bad fitness report, which is a career killer for any naval officer.
Now, it seems like, again, I understand that too much bureaucracy and too much emphasis on, like, following the bureaucracy was fatal in this instance. And, I don't really want to make the comparison to 9/11 because that was a whole separate sort of thing. But there are some vague similarities to how the administration is operating in the aftermath, regardless of what was known in advance. Both of these things could have been dealt with far, far better. And as we've seen this week, the Bush administration has swung hard and fast into CYA mode. And they're going to try, and specifically Karl Rove and Dan Bartlett are trying to figure out how to make this look good for the administration. Any ideas on how they're going to try and do that?
Well, they're already blaming the governor of Louisiana, Governor Blanco, and Mayor Nagin of New Orleans. But I don't know how they can go about blaming the president of Jefferson Parish, Aaron Broussard, who was on one of the Sunday talk shows, I believe it was Meet the Press, where he broke down in tears.
Yeah, we're going to hear that later.
And also indicated that FEMA had cut off his emergency telecommunications lines, mm-hmm. which is what I'm hearing out of the Gulf Coast about jamming, cutting communications, cell phones being disrupted. Now, the cell phones are normally disrupted. They were disrupted here in Washington on 9/11, but we've gone an entire week, and the cell phone companies have methods to get service back up. So I'm just thinking that they're trying to institute an information blockade on the Gulf Coast so the bad news doesn't come out and they can spin and control only the if you want to call it good news. I don't think there's any good news that's come out of this except for the people who have been saved. This is how this administration works. This is a sort of a mixture of the propaganda of the Soviet Union and that of Joseph Goebbels in Nazi Germany. This is sort of like the culmination in a information technology age of those two countries and how they try to manipulate and censor information.
Now, the military has been a significant part of the relief efforts and the response. And a lot of the National Guard troops, or I shouldn't say a lot, but as a reasonable proportion of the Guard troops are folks actually back from Iraq and Afghanistan. Martial law has been declared. Martial law has been in force for a week now in New Orleans. I don't know how far beyond that it extends. If anyone knows of a collection of emergency orders issued in relation to Hurricane Katrina, please let me know. I've been looking for this kind of thing. It'll be fascinating to see how long all these emergency declarations last. Governor Blanco spoke of guard troops with M16s locked and loaded. The troops know how to shoot and kill. They're more than willing to do so. I expect they will. Brigadier General Gary Jones, commander of Louisiana National Guard's Joint Task Force, told Army Times a week ago almost, quote, "This place is going to look like Little Somalia. We're going out and going to take this city back. This will be a combat operation to get the city under control." He also spoke of fighting the insurgency in the city of New Orleans. Now, nearest I can tell, people are just trying to survive down there.
That's right. And I saw that in the coverage, especially by the Washington Post and Newsweek, two entities that have become nothing more than sycophants for this administration. But they were referring to the people in Mississippi who are largely white. They were going through blown out, WalMarts. Finding supplies. This is how they put it, finding supplies. Mm-hmm. And the people in New Orleans who are largely African Americans doing the same exact thing were looting. I mean, this is just the mindset of this administration. This administration is pretty much what you would expect had David Duke been elected president, in my opinion, because it's rife with people who are basically racist. We see that in all of their with all their propaganda outlets, the Rush Limbaughs of the world, but Rush Limbaugh and the Sean Hannitys only reflect what they're being told by this administration. So all those undercurrents of racial undercurrents we're hearing from the Fox Newses and the Limbaughs are just merely a reflection of what these people in the administration think, and to hear insurgencies and looters, and these are Americans, and in the term refugee, and Bush goes down to the Gulf Coast and he says we're going to try to help this region of the world. What in the world is he talking about? This is the United States of America, not some region of the world. I think it just shows how out of touch these people are. And I really think of the sense I get here in Washington, which, you know, inside the Beltway, it's certainly not a good pulse of for the rest of the country. But when you hear some of the comments I've heard from some of the people, I think this country is on the verge of something very, it's going to be very nasty. There's calls for the impeachment of Bush and Cheney. I think these Republicans are going to pay a terrible price next year. And I'm hearing this from people who I thought were fairly not avid supporters of Mr. Bush, but they are Republicans, and they're calling for his head and that of his entire cabinet, all the way down to the FEMA director.
And talk about out of touch. Some of the remarks that Bush made have just been beyond over the top, laden with racist innuendo and language. But so far, worst of all, the absolute worst thing I have heard anybody in a public setting say regarding what's been going on is this piece right here from Barbara Bush Monday in the Astrodome.
And so many of the people in the arenas here are, we're underprivileged anyway. So this is working very well for them.
Okay, so for those of you who couldn't quite glean that from the recording there, Barbara Bush said of the folks that have been evacuated that many of them were poor and underprivileged anyway. This is working out very well for them. And, you know, you pair that up with what Little Debbie has been saying all week, and I went back in time and found the exact reference, which I can't find at the moment, of Jeb Bush responding to a question asked of him during his failed 1994 gubernatorial attempt in Florida. He was asked what did he think he would do for blacks in the state had he been elected, and his response was, quote, probably nothing.
I recall that, and as we know, we can also talk about Poppy Bush, H.W.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it was 1992, the election campaign, and Hurricane Andrew, a similar powerful hurricane struck southern Florida, and we all remember how Bush didn't show up there. Clinton was there before the president, which is, I'm sure, one of the reasons that got Bill Clinton elected president that same year. But this is a family that's totally out of touch with the United States. They remind me of the Windsor family in Britain. They're dysfunctional. They're elitist. They're snobbish. They look down on everybody. I mean, you know, I always remember the pictures of the Queen visiting one of her Commonwealth countries where, you know, the people are dancing around. The look on her face is, oh, yes, these brown people, these black people, these yellow people, it's this patrician attitude that I thought we fought a revolution in this country to get rid of the monarchy, but we seem to have instituted a monarchy because they're talking about Jeb Bush running and Jeb Bush's son and running for president. I mean, this is a family that should be basically pilloried and not allowed to serve in office in any capacity in this nation because of the attitude of people like Barbara Bush, who also said she didn't want to corrupt her beautiful mind at looking at the caskets of U.S. military personnel coming back from Iraq. Her beautiful mind, she called it. Well, I think she's got a very nasty mind. I've tangled with her at the convention in Philadelphia in 2000. I can tell you, this woman is she has icicles hanging off of her. She is something else. I mean, I don't know where people get the idea she's this kindly old grandmother. As I said, she makes Madame Defarge, the French Revolutionary War grandmother who knitted as they chopped off heads with the guillotine. She makes Madame Defarge look more like Mother Teresa every day because she's just a very cold and uncaring person. And then I think at that same interview, George H.W. Bush said, you better watch it if you criticize the president around Barbara here, because you better be wearing your flak jacket. I mean, this woman just has, if she wants to defend her son's terrible stewardship over this nation, I have no problem criticizing her. And, if she wants to take a punch, let it at me. Let I hope she's good, because if she misses, she's had it.
I heard Senator Mary Landrieu from Louisiana threaten to punch anyone, including Bush, if they continued to blame local and state officials for the failed response.
Oh, we had President Clinton on Dennis Hastert's comment about bulldozing New Orleans threatened to physically assault him. Had he been present when he said it? So Bush, you remember, Bush got elected as the great uniter, and now we have the senior senator from Louisiana threatening to punch out Bush, and the past president of the United States threatening to punch out the current Speaker of the House. I think he's done a great job at uniting the country.
Wayne, any last remarks you'd like to make? I'm going to leave myself a little time to get to some more material here.
Well, I think we're going to see an awful lot coming out about the ineffectiveness of the Department of Homeland Security and FEMA. There's moves by Mrs. Clinton, Senator Clinton, to have FEMA broken out and made independent again. But I think DHS, Homeland Security, their budget is $49 billion this year, and it was $43 billion last year. Where has all this money gone when we see these people literally living on the streets and fending for themselves? Where did all this money go? And I think when the questions are asked, we're going to find out a lot of defense contractors, a lot of Bush friends in business, and some foreign countries, foreign companies and foreign countries pocketed a lot of this money for themselves. And I think that's where we're going to see some real ramifications for this administration.
And of course, that'll be the investigation Bush is leading himself into what went wrong.
Oh, well, that's his investigation, but I can tell you that at least I think some in the media have finally woken up and smelled the coffee. The so-called mainstream are really, unless they go back and they're lulled back into that cathartic state again, I think we're going to see some real exposés from some of the so-called mainstream media. And I think that the Democrats in Congress, I know that the Democrats, the Congressional Black Caucus is seething over this. They're still in a sort of state of shock about what happened in Louisiana, Mississippi. But I think when they come, you know, they basically get back up on their feet, they're going to be taking some real action as a caucus against this administration. I think we're going to see some hearings where some of the things that the Bush people don't want to hear, like institutional racism with this recovery, we're going to hear a lot about that in their meetings. And I keep a close eye on what Congressman Conyers and Senator Barack Obama do.
Wayne Madsen is an investigative journalist based in Washington, D.C. You can find out more about him and what he works on at www.waynemadsenreport.org, and that's MADSEN. Thanks a whole lot for joining us this morning, Wayne.
Good to be with you.
All right, take care. We'll be back in just a moment or two with a little bit more news and information. Fallout from Katrina. This here is Dana Lyons. A little music there from Dana Lyons off his latest release, Ride the Lawn, Fight for Your Mother. You're in the waning minutes here of People Rise Up. I'm talking about Hurricane Katrina today. And let's see, what do I want to go to first? All right, here's something else that totally, I mean, it was in the Washington Post, not sure what page, but I've seen no mention of this except for one location beyond the Washington Post. Taking time out from his tremendously overworked schedule in dealing with the Hurricane Katrina fallout, on Thursday, September 1st, George W. Bush found a little bit of time to implement a constitutional provision bypassing the U.S. Senate to fill a top Justice Department position with an official whose nomination was stalled over her involvement with the tactics at the Guantanamo Bay Naval Facility. Alice S. Fisher is going to lead the Justice Department's criminal division. Her nomination had been blocked by Michigan Senator Carl Levin because he wanted to talk to an agent who named Fisher in an email about allegedly abusive interrogations at the military prison at Guantanamo. Fisher says she doesn't recall participating in any of those discussions, and Justice Department officials said the agent did not intend to say that she had. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez also declined to let senators question her, saying it would violate long-standing policy. On and on and on. She can serve until January of 07 with a recess appointment. Okay, I've got 3 minutes of tape here. Let's see. If you go to www.americanprogress.org, and I'll post a link directly to this document, there's a great little demographic census snapshot of who are Katrina's victims. It looks at median income, access to health care, Medicaid payments, disability, child poverty, racial composition, and whether or not households had cars. One of the things that I actually found really surprising was that in terms of access to cars, the entire affected region was below the national average for vehicles without vehicles. So that entire argument that there weren't enough vehicles, you know, statistically anyway, people in New Orleans, the affected regions of Mississippi and Alabama, had fewer people with no available vehicle than the national average. Not quite sure exactly what that means, but there it is. Okay, we're going to listen now to three short pieces of tape. Jefferson County, Jefferson Parish President Aaron Broussard. Let's see. I guess this would be Sunday the 4th. Maybe it's Sunday the 4th. Speaking with Tim Russert. The first clip, he talks about being abandoned. The next one, he gives three examples of FEMA turning aid away. And the last one, he describes the death of mother of a coworker of his. And I'll be back in just a minute or so after this tape.
We have been abandoned by our own country. Hurricane Katrina will go down in history as one of the worst storms ever to hit an American coast. But the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina will go down as one of the worst abandonments of Americans on American soil ever in U.S. history. I am personally asking our bipartisan congressional delegation here in Louisiana to immediately begin congressional hearings to find out just what happened here. Why did it happen? Who needs to be fired? And believe me, they need to be fired right away, because we still have weeks to go in this tragedy. We have months to go. We have years to go. And whoever's at the top of this totem pole, that totem pole needs to be chainsawed off, and we've got to start with some new leadership. It's not just Katrina that caused all these deaths in New Orleans here. Bureaucracy has committed murder here in the greater New Orleans area, and bureaucracy has to stand trial before Congress now. We need strong leadership at the top of America right now. Let me give you just three quick examples. We had Walmart deliver three trucks of water, trailer trucks of water. FEMA turned them back. They said we didn't need them. This was a week ago. FEMA, we had 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel on a Coast Guard vessel docked in my parish. The Coast Guard said, come get the fuel right away. When we got there with our trucks, they got a word. FEMA says, don't give you the fuel. Yesterday, FEMA comes in and cuts all of our emergency communication lines. They cut them without notice. Our sheriff, Harry Lee, goes back in, he reconnects the line, he posts armed guards on our line and says no one's getting near these lines. Sheriff Harry Lee said that if American government would have responded like Walmart has responded, we wouldn't be in this crisis. And I want to give you one last story, and I'll shut up and let you tell me whatever you want to tell me. The guy who runs this building I'm in, emergency management, he's responsible for everything. His mother was trapped
in St. Bernard Nursing Home. And every day she called him and said, "Are you coming, son? Is somebody coming?" And she said, "Yeah, Mama, somebody's coming to get you. Somebody's coming to get you on Tuesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Wednesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Thursday. Somebody's coming to get you on Friday." And she drowned it Friday night. She drowned it Friday night.
Mr. President,
nobody's coming to get it. Nobody's coming to get it. The secretary has promised. Everybody's promised. They've had press conferences. I'm sick of the press conferences. For God's sakes, shut up and send us somebody.
Jefferson Parish President Aaron Broussard speaking on NBC with Tim Russert several days ago, describing some of his feelings regarding the federal response and the private response following the hurricane. If you have any questions or comments about anything you heard today or any other program, please send me email to kboo@riseup.net. You can also send regular mail to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. This is the last program I will be doing before our fall membership drive begins next Wednesday, September 14th. My program will begin at 9:30 in the morning next Wednesday, and it will run 9:30 until 11 a.m. next week only. Nafiz Mossadegh Ahmed, author of The War on Truth, will be my guest for that entire time. In 2 weeks, Tariq Ali will be speaking regarding his book, Secrets of Speaking of Empire and Resistance. Vandana Shiva will be joining us in 3 weeks to talk about Earth Democracy.